Barn is not earth. Say it with me.
Well, welcome to Mind Your Manners, my little podcast here where we touch on some things that are of interest to me. Lately, that's a lot of Harn. Today, we're talking Harn Quest. This is a three-article quarterly piece. We've got the Thespians article, the Kieran Castle article, and the Parnum Keep article. Returning with us today is champion Brent Bailey, editor. And first-timer Joe Adams, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Joe Adams. I've been freelancing for Columbia Games since 1998. I've written, two kingdoms, all the trade routes, and I have the dubious honor of being the person who has written every brothel and courtesan house in Harn.
And also joining us for the first time, Mark Amelin. Mark, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, I visited a few of Joe's brothels, but Kieran is the first place I've written. It's kind of a life goal for me to contribute something back to Harn after playing it as long as I have. So we'll see if Brent can squeeze anything else out of me in the future.
Perfect. Brent, let's start with you. Looking at this overall project for this quarter, what were our goals here? What did we want to put out and why?
So the Harn Quest product is a quarterly. So it's 32 pages of material every 4 months. So my goal was to get 32 pages of something done every 4 months. So sometimes we can bundle together articles in a theme, but other times it's a mix and match. It's a variety of articles. And this was one of those where we have two settlements in greatly spread out parts of Harn, practically as far south and as far north as you can go. And then we have an occupation or profession article. So, where sometimes a customer might buy a, might get their Harn Quest release and say, yeah, this is all stuff that I'm not interested in. Well, hopefully, of these three widely various articles here, something is going to catch their attention and be of use to them in their campaign.
Yeah, and I think these articles, you can put a castle anywhere, you can put a keep anywhere. That castle, Kieran Castle, is not just a castle. We've got a fully fleshed out town with some pretty extensive political machinations going on there. Parnum Keep is also pretty extensive, and this Thespians article is fantastic for bringing, some life to your world. You can drop this into any sort of system, D&D. It doesn't have to be the Harnic setting. And why don't we talk about thespians? This is, as I understand it, part of the broader entertainers themed articles. Joe, you were one of the writers on this one, along with Bernard Beeler. And take me through the thought process on this. Where do you start when you're saying, I'm going to go write the thespians article?
So a lot of it is the past experience. So the first Harn campaign I ran in 1990 was it, that's how the player characters got around. We were a traveling circus that traveled northern Kandae, southern Wrethem, and that later morphed into the traveling circus that is in the city of Galotha. And so it's kind of cool. But I also have done various other articles on entertainers, on theaters. And so I wanted to, kind of pull all that together, and give a place for player characters to have social encounters. So not only is it a vehicle, they could all be members of the circus. But they might go to a fair and or to a production and then interact with the players, with the patrons, with people watching the production. And so that was kind of the genesis of it. And Bernard and I kind of shared that goal. We started the article. It was kind of like all the others started out really big, and then we needed to neck it down to something that fit the page count and had a broad applicability. So there are certain nods in the article to things, other things that I've written. One of them, I did Tomes and Scrolls many years ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the plays that is included is from Tomes and Scrolls. There's a mention to the small traveling circus that I wrote for Tishal. And so we kind of, pick those things and lay those little Easter eggs so that Harn becomes a continuous place. It's not like, you're just going to set, a circus down. The circus lives in the area and really fits, hopefully, seamlessly.
Yeah, and you put a lot of really good information in here. The way the guilds function is detailed, how a character might progress through the different stages of joining a guild or becoming an actor or whatever.
So I'm a college professor by trade, so doing research is fun for me. So I did some reading, and the librarians are great because they put up with me, an engineering professor, asking about books on 14th century theater guilds in France. And so between that and reading on Commedia dell'arte, I was able to really ground the article historical perspective.
Did you diverge from real earthly?
Oh yeah.
Historical perspective. And
Harn is not Earth. Harn is not Earth. Say it with me. and so there are, again, there are other things at play. You're in a polytheistic society. You have everything from feudalism to republicanism. And so all of these people share theater. They all share the arts. And so we did a lot of thinking about, okay, what does a play look like in Kaldor versus wintertime in Orbal versus, halftime at the Pamazani Arena? How do all those things, kind of come together? And so that's what got added in there.
Yeah.
Well, and another aspect that another way, Harn is much more, say, egalitarian as far as men and women go than what the real world was in a lot of places in a lot of parts of the Middle Ages. And so where women couldn't be on stage in certain places and certain times and things, that's not true to Harn. So, that's not something that we put in here. So that's it's that kind of, like Joe said, that a lot of different religions, a lot of different types of people, a lot of different things like that have to all be kind of, it's a fantasy environment. And so people want that. There are certain fantasy elements that mm-hmm. make sense to put in there that might be anachronistic, but they fit and they're good.
It reads very seamlessly. There isn't like a clear jump, if you're breaking from Earth historic tradition to, Harn's version of everything. And I really like that we get, some details on types of performances. And so the art that Richard produced for this one is fantastic.
One thing that Joe and I talked about when we were working on, planning this out and stuff was that a lot of professions on Harn, a lot of the guilds have some overlap with non-gilded people who do some mm-hmm. of the same kind of thing. And so in these profession articles, in these articles that are kind of focused on a guild, we want to mention those people who might be doing the same kind of thing, but they're not part of the guild. So we have a section in here on those ungilded performers. And we didn't get into detailing what all of the different types of entertainers are, because we do in all this stuff, we kind of walk the line between, we want to give the GM and the reader enough information to understand, but we don't want to kind of cut and paste Wikipedia. You know, we don't have to explain all of this stuff, because we kind of figure if you really want to get more into how certain things, you know, where something comes from or how it might work, there's plenty of online resources that you can go to really find that kind of thing out. So we just listed certain types of ungilded performers or certain types of performances in here without really explaining them. We hope that those are self-evident. One is a term that isn't heard often, but Richard did a great job on page 2 illustrating one of those sort of unusual types of performers.
Yes, he did. And I'll overlay that here so folks can see that. You know, that
and those and flatulists were a real thing. I mean, it's not something we made up. It's a real thing. Roland the Farter was, let's see, Edward the Second, not Edward the Second.
Henry
the Second. I believe Roland the Farter was Henry the Second's favorite flatulist, meaning there was more than one. He had a favorite. So they were a real thing. And so we stuck them in there, and Richard did a great job illustrating that.
He's got his own Wikipedia article. So
yeah,
he does. I just found that real quick. So yeah.
Joe, if you were launching your traveling circus campaign, where would you set it today?
So I would pick an area that the player, whoever's going to be the circus master, could have a circuit. You know, mm-hmm. what are some cities that have big festivals that you want to make sure you can hit? And what are some smaller manors that you could visit? The original one that I ran, like I said, was between Northern Kandy and Southern Wrentham. More recently, I ran one in Eastern Kaldor. So they were just kind of doing a big loop from Tashal out to through Kibben, through Getha, up to Gardarin, and then back down. And they just ran that circuit, getting into all kinds of mischief. And that would be kind of what I would think of, you know, and then think about kind of same thing Chaucer did, who would travel with you? So you have your circus, mm-hmm. but you're going someplace. And so who might also tag along? And those people become adventure hooks, NPCs. You know, I think it's a great vehicle for role playing and getting something started in an adventure campaign.
Yeah, and you know, to Brent's point, you also have some good tensions there if they run into ungilded entertainers and at these festivals, and you know, they're thieving left and right, and then the guild's getting blamed.
And as I pointed out, if you have two circuses that are trying to play at the same event, well, you know, who's going to get top billing and who's going to get pride of place? And, you know, there's you know, all kinds of friction that can be exploited.
Yeah, I think there's a ton of fun stories that'll come out of this. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the playership produces and puts out on the forums and things like that. This was a really fun article to read. Thanks for putting this out there. There's a nice little transition over into Kieran Castle at the beginning of that article. Perhaps a little Trojan horse invasion by a group that was dressed up as a traveling, not quite circus, but
right.
group of entertainers. Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about Kieran Castle?
Well, that little bit actually came out of Joe's capsule summary of Kieran in the Orbal module. Orbal is the northernmost part of Harn. It's a place where there are, I don't know, Viking-inspired conquerors who rule over native folks. And that in itself creates a tension, conqueror versus occupied populace. But the Viking clans are not, the Avinian clans are not unified either. It was conquered in 38 pieces, and it almost exists in 38 pieces, or at least five or six major factions. So the royal faction has been quite well detailed, both in the Kingdom and Geldheim article. But I felt what was really needed was some of those second and third and fourth, most powerful clans. And I would certainly put Kieran in the top three or four most important clans. And so to me, I think it is a nice counterbalance and really helps you understand the political tension within the kingdom, the local tension between conqueror and populace, the familial tension between brothers, between factions of the Yaren resistance to this occupation. So there's a lot of levels you can play this campaign.
I think levels is kind of the key word here to this one, because we do have the local geographic interplay between neighboring estates and different families there. We have the in-city families. We've got two brothers. We've got an untold number of wives. We've got there's a lot going on in this article. If you were to set your players here at the beginning of a campaign, what do you think you would pull from this article first and foremost, and say, like, hey, this is going to be a cornerstone. This is what, you know, kind of the elevator pitch. Do you think it would be tension internally, or do you think it would be tension externally with those other settlements? Let me put you on the spot there, by the way.
No. I would go with internal, to tell you the honest truth. I think this is a great place to set a Yaren rebellion, a second Yaren rebellion campaign, because you can play it a lot of different ways. So I would make the players Orbalese, the Avinian side, the Viking side, and that, I don't know, I think we naturally want the rebellions, the oppressed people to get liberated, but I think I would stick them on the side of, how do you keep those peasants down where they belong, right? How do we keep them under our thumbs? And Kieran isn't the worst place. And that's why there are some Yaren that are like, hey, we're doing better with these Viking traders bringing our stuff all over. Like, maybe you should shut up and we should just continue to profit. So
it is.
I would set it and give players that those contradictions to deal with.
It did read interestingly to me, because I felt there was a larger degree of assimilation with the Yaren population than elsewhere. To the point that there was, you know, a fair degree of cooperation. Which is interesting, because, you know, you bring a party there that is looking to rabble rouse, and now they might be actually at odds with the local Yaren. You know, that's another way you could take that too.
No, that's 100% what I wanted.
Yeah. There's a lot of complexity to this location. I really like it, and I think you did a wonderful job. And you know, you've got several named profiles in here. You've got the Valakar Piercy,
sure.
Who's still on the young side. This guy's only 31, and he's got a lot of weight on his shoulders.
Yeah,
and he's also got some family members in town that, you know, are looking to make things interesting.
His younger brother is ambitious and wants that role of clan leader for himself. The way that I view Piercy, he is simple. He just doesn't want the complications. That doesn't mean that he's stupid, but it's also been 60 years since his grandfather took over this place. And he is more of the inclination of, like, we're making good money here. You know, we have land. We can sell grain. We hunt seals. Like, why do we need to go raiding? It's almost like the Viking adventure in him is fading, and the feudal magnate is more coming out.
Mm-hmm.
His brother, I don't know that his brother is any more Viking. His brother just wants the money and the power for himself.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's definitely shades of intrigue everywhere you look here. You know, it does kind of remind me a little Bernard Cornwell with his Saxon
right
works, you know, we're kind of at this point where there's some integration happening between the Danes and the Britons, or the Saxons in that case. So, you know, and then you still have the two separate factions entirely looking to pull it apart. So there's a lot going on there. The economics are very interesting.
You could play as seal hunters almost entirely neutrally. That's another reason to go all over the place and go to seedy ports and have ship breakdowns. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be a politically themed campaign either.
Yeah, you've also got pirates, and who doesn't like pirates?
Those dark pirates. You know,
they're hanging out off the shore. So,
yeah. Yes.
No, there's a ton of things here.
I do wonder, go ahead, Brian. if we counted up the number of implied or explicit conflicts in this article, it's like, you know, page per page there's probably more of that here. This is higher than average number of conflicts, because that is something I think we've talked about that before. That something we try to do in all of our Harn material is we set up a whole bunch of conflicts. Conflict drives story, and so we try to set up a whole bunch of impending conflicts that the GM can pick and choose which ones they want to pull the trigger on. And this article, more than I think a lot of them, there are just so many of them. As you said, there's, you know, between clans externally, internally, between clans internally, between family members internally. There's religious conflict, because there's a nearby the Agricans have the nearby keep at Quaiman. And they come to and recruit from Kieran, and the traditionalist Ivinians aren't very happy about these Agricans, you know, talking their daughters into going off and joining the orders. So, you know, there's religious conflict, there's economic conflict, there's with the piracy, and there's just so much. It's like almost every one of these locations, it's like, oh, there's some conflict there, or oh, that ties into this conflict over here, and you can use those things. So I thought that it came together very well in not being overwhelming with those conflicts. That, you know, that was, you know, a fear at the beginning of this was there's no focus, because there's so much going on. But I think that as we kind of whittled that down to a manageable but still really extensive number of conflicts that you can run in this place. And so as a GM, you can choose to focus on just a couple of them and let the other ones kind of simmer in the background until you need, like, you don't have to even really focus at all on the religious stuff until you want to throw a wild card into the mix and pull that out.
Yeah, you can run a really in-depth local single city campaign with this. Yeah. And I mean, you get 40 locations on the map that are fleshed out, you know, to a really good degree for any GM to be able to take it and run with it and make it their own and embellish. There's a lot in this article, and not to mention that you get the full map plans for the keep. Kieran.
Bill Bean, if we can mention Richard in the other article, I want to comment or really give my plaudits to Bill Bean. I gave him a mess and he turned it into actual architectural reality.
And it looks great. I'll flash it on the screen here so folks can see that. Yeah, and we also get maps beyond just like the grounds. We also get the Cove. We get some of the Atlas Harnica. So yeah, this is a fantastic article. Well done, Mark. Well done, Brent. And everyone else that had a hand in this.
And with a good editor, anything can come together.
But it was a fun one. And that brings us to Parnum. I'm going to admit that I did not get to read this one with the same degree of scrutiny.
Sure.
But Brent, why don't you give us the rundown on what our goal was for this keep over in Meldarine on the mainland? Well, not the mainland, but the Isle of Harn.
So it's mainland compared to the Isle of Meldarine, but yeah, mainland Meldarine. But yeah, which mainland? So I think what Jonathan Davidson wrote this article, and Jonathan has written a few other of the Meldarine locations, the other settlements. He's written a lot of those, and he's got more of them on the way. One thing that kind of struck me about Parnum is that, especially when you read the two of the articles, the two settlement articles in just in this release, where you've got Kieran way up north and you've got Parnum down south, the environment to me could not be any different. That where Kieran is just so, it's not chaotic, but there's so much going on, and you can just kind of feel that that place is bustling. It's just buzzing with activity. It's buzzing with tension. Parnum, to me, seems the only buzzing going on are the mosquitoes in the swamp that surrounds the town. That it's a very like low key kind of place. It's when people say Harn is the backwater of Lithia, of the Lithian continent, well, Parnum's kind of a minor settlement. It's not, you know, Big Thay or Cherfear. It's, you know, a smaller coastal settlement. It's only got a few hundred people, its population. It's been historically very sleepy and not a whole lot going on there. Now, the noble clan, Clan Gwendolyn, that holds it, is trying to change that. They're trying to make Parnum more of an economic factor. So they're investing money in the port facilities. They're really trying to court the mines out to the west. They're trying to court different merchants and things to run your goods through my port. Don't take them down the road to, you know, the other nobles' port down in Zuilos. You know, it's just use mine. And so they're trying to turn that around. They're trying to make this town more more of an economic factor in Meldarine, the Meldarine economy. So when you read it, though, it's very like, well, this is kind of boring. Well, no, it's not, because there's a whole lot of little things going on. It has its fair share of hooks, its fair share of conflicts, but they're written in a more, they're more subtle. They're, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, well, there's still this economic tension with the with other locations. There's any number of bickerings between people in the town and this kind of thing. But one thing that we actually that's in here that I don't really think that we've seen as much in other articles is that so the guy who runs Parnum is he's a constable, so he manages the keep for his brother, who is the Earl. So his older brother is the Earl, and he runs this place. And neither of these guys, so not Sir Fergeth, who runs, holds Parnum for his brother, or the Earl, they're both unmarried. So they have no children. And this is a clan line that have been, the earldom has been around a while, and there have been a noble family for a while, you know, so this is kind of generations that right now there is no next generation between these brothers. So the king of Meldarine and other folks in, you know, Meldarine society kind of see that as a problem. And in this case, the king wants to marry those two, wants to get those guys married. So he has dispatched one of his relatives to basically be a matchmaker and try to set up Sir Fergeth with a match. And so this article, just in a couple sentences or a couple, a paragraph, talks about that he's not that interested. He's turned all these people down, he's turned down all these women and stuff. But that right there is, to me, a really interesting possibility. It's a different angle of a campaign or a different angle of what's going on. That how do you get your players involved in that? Are they carrying messages back and forth? Are they, what are they doing? How does that factor into what your players do? But that was something that I thought was really interesting. And this one is that there's this conflict internally that the new captain of the guard is a woman, a female knight that served for a number of years in the Order of the Lady of Paladins. And she recently has been named captain of the guard, the garrison guard here at Parnam. And so the article doesn't say that there are sparks between them. In fact, it says that they will vehemently deny that there's any interest between them. Well, right there, that's got to be something that you play with, that there has to be something. There's got to be that tension, but it's a romantic tension, not a military tension or a economic tension. And this is something that we don't really have many examples of in Harnik articles. So I thought that was a really kind of interesting thing that Jonathan did here was, there's no barbarians nearby. There's no Gargan nearby. So this place isn't going to get attacked. Now, what else can I do with that? And so there's two angles that he kind of took. One, there's this, the romantic subplot thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the other big thing here is that where Parnam is on that coast, it's kind of a lonely, sleepy part of the coast. Really good for smugglers.
Yes.
So that is the other big element here, is that it's in a swamp. There's all these little unmapped waterways and this kind of thing. It's, hazy and misty all the time and lots of mosquitoes and other, disease carrying things. And so there's a lot of potential there for smuggling activity of either from the mainland, from mainland Lithia, or people cutting off the other ports to try to get contraband or just to evade taxes and this kind of thing. So there's all that going on in Parnam as well. And so that is one of the big conflict areas here is that around the smuggling and what's being done about it or what can be done about it and who's involved and in what way. There's a lot of different little bits and pieces of that spread throughout the article.
Yeah. And, you mentioned the swamp. I believe it was something like 1/6 of the population was wiped out all of like 30 years prior to when this takes place due to a swamp fever. So we've also
50, oh no, it's 60 a bit longer. Years ago. Yeah. It's like 60 years ago.
So what you're saying is they're due is what I'm getting from that.
Could very well be, yes.
So, I mean, there's as much richness to this article as anything else that CGI puts out. It's a great piece of work. I'm looking forward to giving this one a deeper reread. Because I think Jonathan did some great work on it. Again, the maps are wonderful. And you can as a GM that runs several different systems, I can take these and just plop them into anything else that I'm running, which is, really great, because I don't need to go out and buy like a big campaign book for, something else. I can just take one of these modules, plop it in, and there's my town. If I need a kind of a backwater setting, Parnam's great. I mean, it's not huge. The barrier of entry isn't high, but it's still just as rich. So you can file the serial numbers off if you need to, or just run it as is. I love it.
It's, one of the things, like we were talking, some of the contrasts between Kieran and Parnam, where, you know, Kieran has like 40 odd Huffskarls. You know, you've got your Ivinian warriors. These are like really full-time professional soldier kind of guys who are kind of champing at the bit, wanting to go on raids and this kind of thing. While in Parnam, I mean, it's a small wooden keep. It's got a wooden palisade. There's no stone anywhere around this place. It's not like this heavily fortified, strongly defended. Yeah, there's a garrison of, you know, roughly 20, you know, one company, so roughly 20 guys in the garrison there. But it's not a military powerhouse. But like I was saying, there's no reason for it to be. There's no external threats really that they're worried about right now. So that's not where the conflict is. The conflict is in other areas.
Yeah, which is nice. I mean, if you have a group that is really good at role playing and they're like willing to run with those sorts of stories, this is an awesome article for that. Now we get something for everyone in these Harn quests. They're really great to read. Been thrilled with every quarterly release that I've gotten to buy since discovering Harn. More recently than some, but I love it. It's awesome. Congrats on another great release, everyone. I think the community is going to love it. When does this actually hit?
The files have all been sent to Columbia Games. And when I talked to Grant last night, he said that he was hoping to start printing and shipping it later this week.
Oh, okay. We're moving quick.
I know they want to get it out and all before Gen Con, because they're going to be at Gen Con. Some of us are going to be at Gen Con. So, he wants to get it done and out and out of the way before they start really the rush to get everything ready for Gen Con at the end.
Anything else anyone would like to promote or put out there? Any personal projects or fan-in articles that you write or anything like that?
I was going to say, I want to check with Brent, but I have some cliff notes to my own location that I want to put out as fan-in, and I don't know what the boundaries of that. Obviously, I can't recapitulate the whole article, but I guess I'll see you later this week. So
that's actually something, Carrie, so that we have done that a few times where people had like the director's cut, or there were like things that got cut from the article when Columbia put it out. And so they assemble those pieces as I think Mark, in your case, a lot of it it's more like GM's notes. It's like, here's how you can do this. Now, it's not part of the article, but it's kind of the, how do you use the article or supplement the article with this information? So, I would definitely see we should be able to pull some of that stuff together and package it up and release it as a fan and supplement to the article.
You know, when you were ruthlessly making me cut stuff out of my article, I kept all the ones that had interesting intrigue, and just the plain regular places like, this guy makes shoes, they last a long time. You know, those are the things that got cut. So you made it more concentrated, Brent.
Oh yeah. Well, that's the things that get left in that are kind of mundane are only left in if somebody hasn't come up with something much more interesting. You know, it's like we know what, you know, it's like we don't have to say that, oh, the, you know, the woodworker specializes in making barrels. I mean, if you give me some like really interesting little aspect of the woodworker, well, that's what's going to go in. The barrels kind of there because we didn't have anything else. But, you know, but sometimes barrels is a very cool thing because you're like, oh, what is that? Who's buying those? What are they doing with them? Can I smuggle something in there? Gee, there's smuggling going on here. Is the barrel maker involved in this? Is he making false bottomed barrels? You know, there's all that kind of stuff that those, you never know where those little facts are going to, what idea that's going to spark in someone's head. Yeah. So that's why we put them in there.
So one last thing, I guess, is I'm also the editor of the fanzine for Harn. It's called Tona Hexus. All 15 articles, 15 15 issues are available on lithia.com. So if anybody's interested, they can send a pitch or an article to tonahexis@gmail.com. And then they will see me as the editor. And we work and put all that stuff together. We do two issues a year. So we're coming up on the call for articles here for the winter issue pretty shortly.
Fantastic. I will link that in the description so folks can see that too.
Great, thanks.
I have a backlog of those to read through, but I did read the last one. It was great. So, you know, it's so great to see such an active community for this product. So it's great. And then at the same time, we also have the Shibasa, however you would like to pronounce it, Kickstarter running currently. So I'll put a link to that as well. And I think that'll do it for us today.